good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
And I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
World government is the structure necessary for global justice.
First, we Americans are going to have to yield up some of our sovereignty. That's going to be, to many, a bitter pill. Pat Robertson has written in a book a few years ago that we should have a world government, but only when the Messiah arrives. He wrote, and literally, any attempt to achieve world order before that time must be the work of the devil. Well, join me. I'm glad to sit here at the right hand of Satan.
Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. We're going to fight them off. A United Nations army couldn't hold us back. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, Come and Take It patches, Sheepdog, Zombie Response Team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Today's guest is Dakota Hughes of TheMorePerfectWay.com. Dakota, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to have you on. Now, what woke you up initially to the need to prepare?
Well, I was pretty young when the Y2K scare came around, and it kind of hit me as something cool, you know, the cool factor involved of, being able to continue on and then nothing ever happened. And as I got older, I was interested in the great outdoors and hunting and fishing and stuff like that. But when I had kids, God really put the conviction on my heart that I was the provider, and that it was my responsibility to take care of them if the trucks ever stopped coming to Walmart. And if I ever had to make my own way, it was totally on me.
Yeah, is it first? I think it's 1 Thessalonians, maybe 5:8. I might be getting it wrong, and I hate to do that without looking it up. But there's a verse right around in that neighborhood that says, he that doesn't provide for his own family is worse than a pagan or an unbeliever. So you're absolutely right on. I think it's definitely a calling that God puts on our hearts to be prepared and provide for our family's safety.
That's absolutely right, yeah. Says he's worse than an infidel.
Yeah,
absolutely. And if you look in the, I think it's the 1828 Noah Webster's dictionary, the very first dictionary Noah Webster put out, it had a lot of biblical definitions, and part of providing is security also, which led me to get my concealed carry license and try to be the complete package for my family.
Yeah, that's great. It was 1 Timothy 5:8, so I had the numbers right and the first letter wrong, but everything else was right. So 1 Timothy 5:8 rather than 1 Thessalonians 5:8. So I wouldn't have won in the Bible drill today.
Now, we'll do Bible quiz next time.
All right. When did you decide to start your blog?
I started my blog at the beginning of this year, and it's been a slow progression, but there's so much stuff I'm still wanting to hit on, and it's just it's great all the ways I've been led and all the knowledge I've learned about how a man can live better than society wants him to, and it doesn't cost more money. You just have to think outside the box and do things differently.
And you got to be willing to work, because sometimes it takes a little more effort. You can't spend as much time watching Dancing with the Stars, right?
Absolutely. I agree completely. I sold my television, my gaming systems, and I heard this somewhere else. This isn't mine, but I heard this guy say one time, you know, if the truck stopped running tonight and a good Christian man wasn't able to feed his family, you know, the typical Christian here in America, I could see him out in his backyard, nothing to feed his family, and his kids hungry, saying, "Daddy, what are we going to eat?" I could see him praying, saying, "Lord, you know, provide, my kids are hungry." And I could just imagine a chicken running right in front of him with a box of matches hanging from his neck, and him look up at that thing and drop his head back down and say, "Lord, please, you know, feed me."
No idea what to do with it.
Absolutely. People's lost the basic skills it takes to live. You know, we can't take advantage of the Lord's provisions a lot of times because of lack of knowledge.
Now, do you have a garden now?
I do. I don't have a lot of land here, but we've did some intensive square foot gardening this year, and it's productive. I've been doing my own compost, and I'm looking to get into worm composting and leaf composting also, and try alternative ways of making free nutrients, you know, feed the dirt that feeds the plants.
Yeah, absolutely. Animals is a great way to do that. Do you have any animals right now?
No, I don't yet. We're looking into rabbits, maybe for meat and for their composting ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do both of those things. Yeah, we compost, but we don't have animals at this point. And, you know, it is, animals are, it's another time factor, and you always have to think about how much time you have to invest in projects like that. Gardening's that's a big time investment as well. But, you know, I think that people that get those survival seed vaults and think that they're going to go out and start producing 100% of their own food, the day after it hits the fan, I think they're kidding themselves, because, I've been gardening for a few years now, maybe about 5 or 6 years, and, there's a very steep learning curve in it.
You know, I think the seeds are viable, and they're good seeds, but the problem is it's another false sense of security. A person buys that vault and thinks if something happened, you know, they'd probably starve to death before they got the first ear of corn.
Yeah.
If you're not already doing it and you don't have the land prepared for it, I mean, chances are slim that you'll have a bountiful harvest.
Yeah.
When you're forced into it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the seed vaults are good, but I would recommend somebody to get two of them and plant the first one, because there's going to be things that in that seed vault that are going to do well in your area, and there's going to be other things in that seed vault that are not going to work in your area. And it's just, it'll have to do with the soil and, you know, how much sun you get every year and how much rain you get and everything affects, you know, what's going to grow for you and what's not going to grow for you. There's, you know, we have a really hard time in South Florida even getting tomatoes because it's so hot here in the summertime. And then in the winter, it's just not quite hot enough. So it's I've had a couple of years where I did really good on tomatoes, but, more often than not, I don't do well with tomatoes here, which are something that, you know, most of the rest of the country, you can grow a tomato. But, you know, we get good pineapples, so.
Well, I love a good pineapple, but I think you're absolutely correct. You know, certain genetics were adapted for certain regions, and something we've been doing, we've been seed saving. And if you selectively save seeds, you know, over 5 or 6 growing seasons, you'll have locally adapted genetics that will flourish in your own region. So that's something we've been on, and trying to get the very best stock for our local area.
Yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah. Next year I'm looking to get more into the heirloom varieties, some of the non-hybrid, you know, go pretty old school, and start putting them in the ground and getting them selective seed saving to get them accustomed to the conditions here, and I just can't wait.
And what did you grow this year?
Oh, we did mostly typical garden vegetables. We did tomatoes and peppers, cucumbers. We did a lot of herbs, not a whole lot, but we did parsley and cilantro and lots of basil. We also did eggplant, a couple varieties of eggplant. We've done planted a couple pawpaw trees in my front yard, which I'm hoping will do well. Have you ever ate a pawpaw?
I've never eaten a pawpaw, no. I didn't realize it was a food.
Yeah, absolutely. A pawpaw is the largest fruit native to North America, and it's very tropical-tasting fruit. It's kind of related to a banana, but it's in between like a mango, a pineapple, and a peach, probably. It's absolutely delicious.
Wow. It's funny that they're not more popular.
Yeah, we have them in the woods around here, bountiful. They're everywhere.
Huh. Very cool. How was your harvest this year? Did you have a bumper crop, or is it tough?
Well, no. Everything worked out pretty well, with just a couple exceptions. But we were working with such a small grow area that it was what was to be expected. But I had a couple tomatoes that were approaching 2 pounds when they were ripe. So
wow,
I was great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they were. It was a great year for tomatoes up here.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. And are you starting to get ready for winter there? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. We're covering all of our ground with either mulch or a cover crop. And so we're chopping down all the old and composting and covering all the soil with either wood chip or leaf mulch and getting everything ready for next year.
And then that'll keep you from having to break up the soil structure when you get ready to replant next year?
Absolutely, yeah. I won't have to do anything, but just scrape a little mulch back and put my starter plants right on in the soil.
Now, are you into ham? Do you have your ham license?
Absolutely. I think it was last December I finally pulled the trigger and got my technician class ham license, which is the very first tier in amateur radio license. I've been procrastinating for years upon years because I thought it would be expensive and difficult, but I come to find out there's options to where you can get into it on not too much money, and really a weekend of studying the question pool was all it took.
Okay, can you kind of walk us through the process of how you went about getting the information and signing up for the class and what all's involved in that?
Yeah, absolutely. The question pool for the test is completely public, the question and answers. It's all multiple choice. I believe it's a little over 300 questions altogether. So all the questions and answers are public. And it's all posted online. And there's lots of study guides, and there's also practice exams that will give you your percentages and scores. But I started studying for about a week, I think, and I Googled and looked up the local ham clubs. And I was, you know, I'm in rural West Virginia, but there was lots of local ham clubs around here. So I found the next meeting when they were administering tests, and I went and passed it, and I was kind of excited. And it wasn't too much later, I talked my wife into taking hers, and she passed it also, and it was a pretty quick process. It just cost $15, and really a weekend worth of studying, and I don't think anyone would have a problem passing it.
Wow, that's fantastic, $15. And then if you don't want to go get a big operation and spend a lot of money on an expensive system, you can just get a little like Waxung off of Amazon to start out and start receiving and maybe talking to some people locally, and then maybe as you save up you can buy more advanced equipment. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Those Waxuns are great. what I went with was a brand called Baofeng. Baofeng.
Yeah, Baofeng. Uh huh.
Yeah, I have the UV5R. I believe is what model it is, and it's a little dual band handheld walkie-talkie type deal, and it's fantastic. I got it shipped from Amazon for I think $37, and
wow.
It has a lot of features that you can't get with an American-made radio at, you know, 4 or 5 times the price. It's dual band. It will receive on FM broadcast. It has a built-in LED light, and the accessories for it, like bigger batteries or a speaker microphone, are really cheap and affordable on Amazon. And I bought several of those, and for the money to get into it, you can actually program it to be used as a police scanner. So it really has a lot of versatility for the price. I've been testing mine out and taking it on trips to the shooting range and all kinds of things. It's been bumped and dropped, and I've had it almost a year, and I've still yet to break it.
All right. But then you've got several backups in case you do, right?
Yeah, I do, and I have a base station at the house, a little bit bigger set up, and an old modified CB antenna from the 70s. And it's a secondhand base station for ham radio, and I don't have a whole lot of money in it, and it's fairly low power. But in the short time I've been licensed, I've made contacts to, I think, around 50 countries as far away as Ukraine and Russia.
Wow, that's very cool. Now, how much did that setup cost you?
You know, I got like probably $400-$500 in that base setup, but there's a lot of versatility there.
And you mentioned that you're in rural West Virginia. Are there a lot of other ham operators in your area?
You know, I was surprised. There are several clubs within a half an hour drive, and a fairly big scene. There's a community out there of expert communicators known as ham radio operators that are waiting with open arms for anyone to join and put a little resiliency in your preps. I'm telling you what, these guys are experts in backup power and solar and battery banks, and they've taught me a whole lot.
And do people in your area tend to be fairly self-sufficient?
Yeah, we're really blessed here. Most of the people around here still grow a surplus and do things such as canning, and hunting's a really big part of the culture, and a lot of know-how skills, you know. There's a lot of people that fix things themselves around here instead of call someone to do it. So I'm truly blessed. I'm surrounded by the salt of the earth, and if I can't get something done around here, I can always call someone to help me, and we're in a very secure area. We're secure from natural disasters and just a lot of resiliency and natural resources in the land around here.
And you're up in the mountains, so a good snowstorm kind of shuts down all the roads around. So I guess folks that don't have more than 3 days worth of food tend to not make it through the winter, don't they?
That's right. It weeds them out, I guess. Yeah, we've seen a couple good power outages in the middle of winter for a week. And I've come to find out that the power outages during the winter is much better than during the summer. All of your food can stay cold. You just go throw it in some snow outside. And we do pretty good around here. Did you hear about the windstorm that came through here a couple years back? They called it a derecho, I believe.
No. Tell us about it.
It was a new name. You know, they're naming these storms something different every other season. But it was a straight-line windstorm that started from up in the Chicago area. And it pretty much wiped out half the power to West Virginia. Here in my small town, we were without power for over a week, and we were without water. The local water company didn't have any more generators to run the pumps, and we went half that time without water or power. And it was put a little faith in humanity for me. People started just helping each other, and it was excellent. I'd like to do it again sometime.
Now, what I think we probably all did hear about was the river getting contaminated from the chemical spill, from the leakage from the coal processing plant. Was that anywhere near you?
Yeah, it was pretty pretty close to me, but I'm upriver from it, so it didn't affect me. But it affected some family and friends, and it was truly a testament to having a little bit of water storage and a means to purify. There was a lot of people that had to drive far out of their way to get potable drinking water. And I think I got a couple people on board to get some gravity-fed filters and stuff to, you know, have a little resiliency in their own life through that disaster there.
Yeah, all those things are can be used for teaching tools, that's for sure. Now, you tinker a little bit with lock picking. Can you give us some examples of when that might come in handy for a prepper?
Oh, man. There's so many times that could come in handy. Originally, I got into lock picking because of the cool factor. And I've come to find out it's a very practical skill that everybody should have in their toolbox. The first thing it showed me was that a lot of times locks can be a false sense of security. A lot of the locks that we put on our front doors and garages that we lock up when we go on vacation are nothing more to a criminal than just a speed bump. Wouldn't even really slow them down. But I got into lock picking and found out you could build your own lock picks, and you didn't have to invest a lot of money in it. So that's the route I went. I built my own lock picks and tested my own security at my home and found out that it was laughable that a criminal with, you know, a half an hour on Google could absolutely just come in my house anytime they wanted to.
Very cool. Now, you said you made your own tools, but now if you didn't want to, what are those tools fairly easy to come by, and what would you start out with?
Yeah, I would start small. There's lots of bigger kits with hundreds of different pieces for different jobs, and that's really not necessary for the basics. A person could spend a weekend studying it, get into the basics of lock picking, and could really figure out how secure their own home is, and also have the skills in case a friend or a family member got locked out, which has happened to me about, I think, 3 times this summer. I've had to help some friends get into their own homes because they were locked out, and I saved them some money. But you can look online, and there's some websites with little 5 and 10 piece kits that will get someone started into it for $10 to $15. And as you progress and get better, you can get a better piece of kit. But a lot of them are built for the everyday carry in mind. You know, some of them are in the shape of credit cards. It'll slip right in your wallet, and some of them are MOLLE compatible to put on your vest or a tactical sling like you have. And there's a lot of different routes you could go with it.
And then you mentioned that it showed you how vulnerable your own locks were. What did you do to beef up the security at your house?
Well, the best thing for security, if you have neighbors, get to know them. Neighbors are fantastic. I'm blessed here with the salt of the earth all around me in every direction. But there's a lot of things you can do to toughen physical security. Make sure your porch lights work. Make sure you're not the easiest target in the neighborhood. You can go out and spend a lot of money on a lock, and someone can still bust out a window and get in. But what you want to do is not present an easy target, and there's many ways you could do that. You could put up a beware of dog sign even if you don't have a dog, and that might make someone think twice. But there's just scores of information on the internet about what's a good lock and what's a bad lock.
And do you like those there's a few different ones, and they all have different names, and I can't think of any of them right now. But basically, they're bars that you can place on your door, your front door, to keep it from being able to get kicked in. Do you like those, and are you familiar with them?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic investment. You know, if a criminal wants in, they'll get in. But what that will do is that will buy someone time to be able to get to a weapon to defend their family, or to do whatever it takes to have that little bit of extra advantage time, so you're acting and not reacting to the situation. It's definitely always a good idea whenever you could put a kick plate on, like you're talking about, and definitely slow them down. There's some reviews online of them, and the ones I have here aren't the very best, but I'm pretty sure someone would have a hard time kicking in the door.
Very cool. And now, do you have some videos and posts about lock picking and things like that, and people can go over to your blog and learn a little bit about that, some basics?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a padlock bypass tool that was sent to me to do a review called a Quick Stick, and it'll bypass a lot of the cheap Chinese locks we put on our garages, and a person wouldn't even have to pick it. It's really a vulnerability built into the mechanism of the lock. And also I have a video demonstrating I got a Swiss Army knife, and there's a tool on a Swiss Army knife that's used to scale fish, I believe. And since I never used it, I filed it down to make a pick, a fold-out pick out of that Swiss Army knife. And it took about a half an hour to make. And I got about five or six of the locks I use around the house to lock up the basement and the garage. And I used that homemade Swiss Army knife lock pick, and went through five or six padlocks in just a matter of a minute and a half, 2 minutes, just to show how vulnerable they can be.
Wow. Now, do you think combination locks are more resilient than padlocks?
To a pick, absolutely, but they can be, they're susceptible to attack called a shim attack. And they can be shimmed a lot of times. Sometimes they can. But sometimes it's a better option, sometimes it's not. It all depends with what type and brand you go with.
What's the best brand?
Oh, that's up for debate, right? There's lots of good brands out there. When it comes to combination locks in particular, I'm not too sure, but some of the better padlocks in general would be something like an American lock, a Commando lock, anything made by Medico. There's a whole bunch of good locks out there. At a certain point, you get diminishing results because someone could always break a window. So if you spend, you know, $300 on a lock when a 2 cent brick could go through a window, it'd be a little bit pointless.
But yeah, there's, that's true.
Lots of means to beef up security.
Cool. So now, can you tell the folks where they can find your blog? We're going to have links to it in today's show notes, but we got folks that are listening on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube that may not be there to click the link.
Absolutely. You can find my blog at themoreperfectway.com.
Dakota, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. God bless.
Detroit high priority 911 calls average 58 minutes for a response. How much longer will it be until budget cuts, natural disaster, or a total collapse make you responsible for your own security? The new book, Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics by David Kobler and Mark Goodwin, will teach you how to organize your team or neighborhood into a force to be reckoned with. You'll get tips to harden your home and protect your family, life, and property, both now and after the stuff hits the fan. Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics is available in paperback, Kindle, and audio editions. Buy it from Amazon.com before it's too late.